Ladies and gentlemen, today we have an examination of the PhD thesis of Master of Science Sedomir Stevcic. He will defend his thesis titled The Use of Biological Traps for Water Treatment in Recirculation Aquaculture Systems. As the opponent, we have Professor Emeritus Lauri Arvola from the University of Helsinki. As the custos appointed by the Faculty of Mathematics and Science, I declare this public examination opened.
Distinguished custos, honored opponent, ladies and gentlemen. In my PhD thesis, I studied the bioremediation of wastewaters coming from recirculating aquaculture systems, or shortly RAS. First, let's see what is the bioremediation. The bioremediation means to clean the contaminated water or soil in a natural way. That is to use the living organisms to remove contaminants and pollutants from water or soil. Living organisms such as plants, algae, bacteria, and fungi. Nature cleans itself the best. The worldwide need to increase the fish production pushes aquaculture industry towards more intensive production. Consequently, this intensification could lead to environmental problems such as eutrophication and acidification, and also to increased freshwater consumption. Now let's see what is RAS. The main idea of this aquaculture system is to recycle water. The first part of this aquaculture system is culture tank, where fish or other animals are cultured. Those animals produce a lot of waste that has to be removed from the circulating water. Thus, RAS has a system of filters. First, solids such as fecal material and uneaten feed are removed by the mechanical filtration. Next, beneficial microbes located in the biological filter are used to remove microscopic waste particles and to convert toxic ammonia excreted by fish into nitrate. Before the water goes back to the culture tank, it has to be adjusted for the fish growth. Oxygen must be added and pH must be increased. Even though this system is quite efficient, some amount of water has to be discharged out of the system due to the accumulation of waste particles products. This water that is discharged is effluent or waste water and is mostly less than 10% of the total water volume. As a result, new water is added to the system. RAS has many advantages over the traditional flow through aquaculture systems. It enables fish production in the relative isolation from the surrounding environment. It offers reduced water consumption and improved opportunities for wastewater management and nutrient recycling. However, the RAS does not reduce the total nutrient discharge into the surrounding environment, but it concentrates nutrients. So the RAS wastewater is very concentrated with large quantities of organic matter, nitrogen and phosphorus, which may lead to the eutrophication of surrounding environment. And also a lot of nutrients are lost out of the system. RAS with concentrated nutrients allows new opportunities to improve the utilization of waste as a valuable resource in so-called circular economy. Therefore, I have researched an idea that can remove the dissolved nutrients from RAS wastewater. And by implementing this idea, environment can be conserved and protected by simultaneously preventing the loss of valuable nutrients out of the system. The idea is to use microalgae to trap nutrients from the RAS wastewater and to incorporate them into their biomass. Microalgae are the best organisms for this purpose. However, harvesting of microalgae is a major challenge, as mechanical and chemical harvesting can take up to 90% of the total investments and is mostly suitable for high-value products. Moreover, their poor digestibility in some fish species and their small cell size limit their use mostly for larval stages of fish. Therefore, biological harvesting by filter-feeding organisms such as zooplankton and using their biomass as an aquaculture feed could therefore mitigate the constraints of microalgae by remediation of rust wastewater, by their harvesting procedures and their small cell size and digestibility. Thus, the cycle of water and nutrients can become complete. Let's see again rust together with the idea. So, microalgae will be used to grow. They will be grown in the rust wastewater to trap nutrients, dissolve nutrients that are normally discharged into the surrounding environment. The discharge water volume will stay the same, but our water will be cleaner and safer for the environment. Those microalgae will be harvested by filter feeders, and filter feeders will also harvest or filter any residual organic particles in the water, and their biomass will be used as a feed for cultured organisms. This now becomes integrated multi-trophic aquaculture system, or shortly IMTA system, where two or more compatible organisms from different trophic levels are simultaneously cultivated in a single system where waste from the fed organisms are used as inputs for the secondary or tertiary organisms. Integrated aquaculture increases significantly the sustainability of RAS and aquaculture in general due to the optimization of available natural resources and to the optimization of available natural resources and also diversification of revenue-based activities. The first challenge for using microalgae is the mass production. Microalgae cultivation systems are commonly classified as open systems, such as raceway ponds, and closed systems or photobioreactors. There are many types of different photobioreactors, but the most common ones are flat plate, also tubular, and bubble column photobioreactors, as I used in this project. In Boreal zone, that is in the northern latitudes, using open systems, it's not feasible due to the low temperatures and low light quantity and quality. What about the light? Is it better to use artificial or natural light when producing microalgae? Generally, it is better to use artificial lights due to the lower photosynthetic efficiency of sunlight, that is 4%, than artificial light, 17%. Photosynthetic efficiency is the part of light energy converted into chemical energy during the process of photosynthesis. So, in other words, more light energy is wasted by using sunlight instead of artificial lights. Moreover, sunlight energy consists of only 43% of photons in the light region important for the photosynthesis, while LED grow lights can consist up to 100% of these photons in this light region. Consequently, the price to produce microalgae on sunlight is higher than on artificial lights. In the boreal zone, it is for sure a better option to use artificial lights than sunlight. Production of microalgae requires only three inputs: light, carbon dioxide, and nutrients, while their output is amazingly wide. They can be used for water treatment, landfill management, for producing biochemicals such as biofertilizers and bioplastics. Their biomass can be used as human food and animal feed, for producing biofuels, and most importantly, for producing high-value added products such as antioxidants, pigments, for example, astaxanthin, omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, vitamins such as vitamin B12, and others such as pharmaceuticals. Market for microalgae is growing rapidly. Currently, Europe has the biggest market for microalgae. And the worldwide growth rate of microalgal market is at least 5%, which is a quite high growth rate. The most important estimation to see here is that the use of microalgae as an animal feed is the second highest market, just after using them as a human food. Research on microalgae is also growing rapidly. Here you can see the number of original research papers from 1997 until 2020, where the blue line are studies done with microalgae in general, orange line are studies done with microalgae and wastewaters, and gray line are studies done with microalgae for the purpose of bioremediation of these wastewaters. You can notice the exponential increase in the last decade. What about the production cost? Production cost of microalgae varies from ranges from 2 to 600 euros per kilogram of microalgal dry weight, around 50 euros per kilogram on average. This high variability is due to different factors affecting the production cost, such as type of cultivation system, open, closed, and their variations, geographical location with its climate, size of the production facility, and light, its type, quantity, and quality. By optimizing all conditions needed for cultivation of microalgae, the production price could be lowered even below 1 euro per kilogram, taking into account that the price of carotenoids, the most valuable microalgae products, can be from 300 to 7,000 euros per kilogram. The most valuable carotenoid is astaxanthin, produced by microalga Haematococcus pluvialis, which has 2 to 6% of astaxanthin of their dry weight. So 1 kilogram of astaxanthin can be produced for 15 euros and can be sold for 7,000 euros. That is 99.8 profit margin. Cultivation of microalgae requires sufficient light, as countries in the boreal zone do not have enough light intensity in photo period. I used LED grow lights in this project. Specifically, I used state-of-the-art LED grow lights with a continuous light spectrum from Finnish company Valoya. Then CO2 is required, appropriate pH and temperature, which was 17 degrees in this project, and supply of nutrients. I monitor different wastewater and microalgae parameters, such as concentration of nutrients in the wastewater, concentration of microalgae cells in form of density, dry weight, and biovolume, concentration of chlorophyll A, and nutritional quality of microalgae. One of the most important techniques to improve the mass production of microalgae is to select the most optimal, most suitable species for the desired conditions. In this project, I selected these 10 microalgae, fresh, cold water, native species suitable for feeders, 6 green and 4 non-green. As you can see, they vary very much in their shape, size, color, and mobility. Then I proceeded with testing them to see which are the best ones for the conditions of boreal RAS wastewater. This is a photo from the third day of my first experiment. Each microalgae had 2 flasks, one for reference algae medium and another for RAS wastewater. You can already notice which are green and which are non-green microalgae, as green microalgae had higher growth than non-green. The red-colored microalgae is also a green microalgae, but with a high carotenoid, that is astaxanthin accumulation. This microalgae had different life stages with different pigments, thus its color varies from green, between green and red color. This is one of the most researched and most profitable microalgae in the world. So from these 10, I selected these 4 as the best candidates to continue my investigation. That is Monorhaphidium griffithi, Selenastrum, Chlamydomonas reinhardti and Haemaptococcus pluvialis. Daphnia water fleas, small planktonic crustaceans, are mainly non-selective filter feeders that feed on microalgae with high digestion efficiency. In particular, Daphnia magna is one of the most well-known species that is suitable as a feed for or juvenile and mature fish. Obtaining natural and live feed with a steady supply is one of the most important goals in today's aquaculture development. Other nutritive substrates present in RAS wastewater, such as bacteria and suspended solids, are important food supplements for Daphnia. Therefore, microalgae cultivated in RAS wastewater with present bacteria and suspended solids are appropriate medium and feed for Daphnia. To conclude my work, boral RAS wastewater supported the growth and the nutrient removal of tested green microalgae, also growth and microalgae removal of Daphnia magna. Then costly filtration of boral RAS wastewater is not needed for this IMPA system. By screening and selecting more optimal microalgae species, the efficiency of this bioremediation IMTA system could be improved. So which microalgae are the best for the job? Chlamydomonas reinhardti was not found suitable for this system. Coccus pluvialis was found appropriate. Monorhaphidium gryphiti was found the most suitable species for this system. And Silenastrum was also found appropriate. Therefore, this project supports the development of microalgae Daphnia bioremediation system in boral RAS wastewater for preventing the loss of valuable nutrients out of the system into surrounding environment, thus supporting the concepts of circular economy and sustainable wastewater management. Technology readiness levels are a method to assess the maturity level of a particular technology. Levels 0 to 3 refer to the development of an idea from an unproven concept to the offerings by the stakeholders. Levels 4 and 5 refer to the development of a prototype on a small and large scale. Levels 6 and 7 refer to the validation development of the prototype system. And the levels 8 and 9 refer to the production development of a prototype system where the technology becomes available for all consumers. This idea with microalgae, Daphnia bioremediation system in boral RAS wastewater, is currently at the second level, that is formulated concept and application level. Therefore, further research and testing is needed in order to get to the production phase. There are many further questions to answer regarding this idea, of which the two most important ones are how much microalgae and Daphnia can be produced from RAS wastewater, and also can it be economically profitable to trap nutrients from RAS wastewater with microalgae and Daphnia and using Daphnia as an additional feed. In other words, there is a need to quantitatively analyze all components of this system. The research must go on. I would like to thank my supervisors, co-authors, and all other people involved in this project. Honored Professor Lauri Arvala, as the opponent appointed by the faculty, please present the comments that you see my dissertation has given grounds for.
Thank you. So today we are going to evaluate a doctoral thesis, which focuses, as we just heard, on the use of biological traps for water treatment in recirculating aquaculture systems. And this thesis is prepared by PhD candidate Sedomir Stevcik, as most of you know much better than me. So I think the topic is highly relevant because the recycling economy is very hot today, as we just heard. And recycling of all possible resources, also including nutrients of wastewater, should be taken into agenda as soon as possible, and not only here in Finland, but everywhere. This is a very urgent issue. Fish farming industry, in particular, has globally expanded extremely fast, as is indicated, its 15-fold increase since 1980, globally. It has estimated that after next 5 years, for 5 years, global fish farming market will reach nearly $400 billion, which is six times more than the Finnish state budget last year. That clearly indicates how important fish farming is globally. So the thesis we are evaluating today consists of two publications already published in international peer-reviewed journals, one manuscript, and a summary of the subject. Dealing with the material and methods, as well as describing the key results and discussion of the specific contributions. It has been, the author has formulated five specific hypotheses to test, and those vary from the growing conditions to the selection of most suitable algal species and strains, as we just heard. Besides the doctoral candidate, four other authors have contributed in the papers, and two of them are his supervisors. So I'm very pleased that I got this opportunity to act as an opponent today, because it allows me a great opportunity to learn something more by myself. And I hope we have a good discussion today about the different issues you already, in a nice way, presented in your lecture. But maybe we have some more issues as well. So I propose that next we will focus on some of the background and common issues relative to the topic. And also, I wish to talk about some of the details, as I already mentioned, which may have relevance regarding the subject and thesis. So I hope that we all can learn something more. Let's start. Okay. I hope we are talking loudly enough that you can hear both of us. So, as I said before, you formulated five different hypotheses to test, and I think they are very relevant ones. And you have made a great job in testing those hypotheses. And maybe later on we will come by the one those. But let's start by talking briefly about the aquaculture in the Nordic countries, because you quite many times are saying Nordic aquaculture, recirculating aquaculture system. And it has actually quite a long history. Do you know when actually this type of fish farming has initiated in the Nordic countries?
I think the blooming started from 60s when Norway started increasing the production of salmon, but I think the starting, it was maybe at the beginning of a century, so yeah, I'm not sure the exact year, but the sudden increase started from 60s with Norway becoming one of the leaders in the world aquaculture.
It's true, yes. Yes, I have the same understanding. And as you said, the first attempts started already a century before, more or less. You mentioned the Atlantic salmon as the main fish species regarding the Norwegian fish farming industry. What it might be in Finland? What is the most important fish we are cultivating here?
Yeah, I think currently rainbow trout is the main fish produced. There are some other species like sturgeon, pike perch, that are producing, but the main one is the rainbow trout. And I think the Finland is maybe third producer in Nordic countries of rainbow trout. So it has a much less production of than Norway of salmon, maybe 100 times less. But the rainbow trout is blooming. Production is blooming in Finland.
That's true. Yes. In I don't know how it's in Finland so well, but other Nordic countries, the cultivated species also include many more species than maybe we have here in Finland, like eels and blue mussels and so on. And I have understood that there is a great diversity actually in Nordic aquaculture industries in terms of not only the production, but also in terms of the species cultivated, and also the production systems vary quite a lot. So in that sense, I was a bit confused about the expression Nordic aquaculture system, what actually it means. I understand that in the Nordic countries, except maybe in summer, we have quite low water temperature and maybe not too much of sunlight in winter.
Yes. But can you please? Regarding the diversity of species, I found interesting results that Finland has the most diverse production of aquaculture species in the Nordic countries.
Okay.
Yeah, you can see here all the species produced in Nordic countries, and you can see that Finland has the most, I think, 21 species, followed by Sweden, maybe 16. So regarding diversity, it's leading the way.
What might be the reason for that?
Maybe trying to find the most optimal species.
Maybe.
It
is not that big industry, maybe, in Finland, and the Finnish farmers have not focused just few species because of the mass production. I don't know, but maybe something like that.
Yes, yeah. Good question. But for sure, Norway is is much higher. It has also rainbow trout 3 to 4 times higher than Finland. And so Norway is the best country in the Nordic countries for producing most of the fish.
Spoiling the Finnish commercial fishing.
Yes.
Completely.
Yes.
as said often.
Yes.
Yes, your numbers also clearly indicate the importance of this aquaculture industry in the Nordic countries and especially in Norway. There is, you mentioned there in that slide that Finland has only 1% of the Norway production, and it's really a minor contribution within the Nordic scale as a whole. I got some numbers from 2005, and according to those, which are already 15 years old, we have to keep in mind that the Finnish aquaculture industry produced some $500 million US dollars, maybe a bit more than $450 million euros, and for example, in Norway, it was almost 5 billion.
Yeah.
A big difference, really. Yes, it's that is the some sort of background which help us to somehow estimate how important the issue is that we are talking today, also in terms of not only recycling the water, but also treating the wastewaters and using the nutrients which the wastewater contain. Yes. Whitefish is in Finland, is it the second most important farmed fish species, or which one? After rainbow trout. Or trout.
There is no whitefish here. I have one more graph table. This is Finland. Whitefish. This is very old data. So I'm not sure, but I think it's one of the top three fishes produced.
Probably it's still more or less like that.
Yeah.
But how important are those inland fish farms we have in Finland? Have some statistics also from those.
Yes, I think it's in Finland. It's a condition. It's stable. I think the proportion between sea areas and inland is not changing so much. Still, this is quite old statistics, but I think nowadays it's improving to have more inland aquaculture then to increase the number of inland production systems, as also is the trend in Norway and other Nordic countries. In Norway, the trend is to increase inland production and also to remove these net cages from fjords into the open sea. But still, one of the main goals is to increase the inland production, to increase the number of RAS systems.
The type of the production different in inland fish farms than those in the Baltic?
Yes, yeah, it's very different and regarding the wastewater, there is more problem for open aquaculture system. The wastewater not so crucial. There is not so much discharge of those farms. The need to decrease wastewater is not pushing so much aquaculture industry to make more inland, but other reasons like maybe parasites in open sea. But I think still it's the main goal of European Union to decrease as much as possible waste discharge. So for us is the perfect option as the easiest way to control the waste discharge, but still the aquaculture in general is a very small contribution of waste discharge. The biggest one is our farms, agriculture, aquaculture. I think for nitrogen, maybe 2% in Finland of the waste contributes aquaculture, while more than 60% goes from agriculture. So,
but locally, it may have some importance.
Yes.
We have to keep in mind that always we have to think the local situation. Yeah. The average numbers doesn't tell too much. So the brood fish farms and hatcheries are mainly locating in inland. I have understood. Yes. And we have only few fish farms which rely on groundwater sources, I guess, in Finland.
Not sure about those data.
And those probably are very small ones. According to some statistics from 2006, I don't know. I was a bit lazy not to find the most recent one statistics, but according to that statistics, we had some 141 farms producing food fish in the coastal area and a bit more than 60 in inland. I don't know if that is the present day situation, but probably it somehow indicate where most of the fish farms are locating. And I also understood when I tried to learn what is the current situation in fish farming in our country, that actually only a very few fish farms use water recirculation.
Yes, yeah.
Someone told me from the Luke, the Finnish Natural Resources Research Institute, that many more have started the production, but later on finished for various reasons, which also indicate, as you said before, that we are still almost at the beginning of starting to apply these new technological possibilities.
I heard the similar that maybe 9 or 10 fish farms recirculating fish farms in Finland, but I think the only one that is successful is from Finforel. And they have different facilities, but the famous one is in Varkaus. And they're from last year are having even solar panels, so that means that their profit is going up, not like other farms that is going down. So that's good news. Yeah. They produce around 1 million kilos of rainbow trout a year, so it's a quite good number.
Yeah. Even with that one, I have heard some rumors that the quality of the fish meat probably is not the best one. I don't know. I don't have my own experience, but it may be also dealing with the recirculation system, how it is functioning, and how stable are the conditions. I don't know, but anyway, rainbow trout is quite, and whitefish, both are species which are quite different fish species than, let's say, some cyprinids, which probably are not so sensitive for different odors, for example. But let's hope they will manage and improve the production.
I think the research on this, I think this chemical, Gesmanin or something like that, the chemical that gives this off flavor due to the biological filter in us.
Yes.
But I think the research is growing on how to combat this this problem. One of the ideas to somehow replace microalgae instead of these bacteria in biological filter, but it needs much more research on that.
One of those original initial algae species you was tested at the very beginning is just this kind of species which may give some specific flavor or odor to the water. Synura especially. You have plenty of Synura in the water. The smell is awful.
Okay. Yeah. Luckily, it didn't grow in our system, so we took it out.
So, maybe at this point we can conclude, as you did already before, that. The development of efficient techniques for recirculation of wastewater coming from the fish farms or aquacultures is still under development. It's not yet fully justified system, especially here in the countries with cold climate.
Many challenges still to overcome.
Yeah. So do you think, like in Varkaus, they have indoor systems, if I have understood correctly, only indoor?
Yeah,
so it's
so.
Completely out of realism to think that we could have something growing outdoor.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
What do you think?
I think in Finland and all countries in the border zone, it's very, very challenging to have outdoors. Not only microalgae, but also fish. The low temperatures and also contamination is a big problem. So I think the best option for all this idea is to have everything indoor, artificial, as least as to control everything as possible.
Indoor systems on the other way around will cause additional costs.
Yes.
Yes. So I was thinking whether it would be possible to somehow use outdoor systems during the summertime, but of course that is costly. Also, if you must have secondary systems outdoor and indoor, So that probably is not economically very profitable way of thinking.
Yeah, maybe if fishes are indoor and maybe don't use microalgae, but maybe plants for treating of those wastewater. I think that even those plants, for example, in constructed wetlands, can even during winter function on a lower efficiency. But maybe that is feasible, but still they could be more cost than maybe having everything indoors with microalgae instead of plants. So from my understanding, I think the less outdoors systems, it's better for the boral zone.
The only thing, maybe not the only one, but one thing I was starting to think a bit more is the volume of water which must be treated, like in this Varkaus example. If I estimated correctly, the tanks and aquacultures already now have a volume of something like more than 10,000 cubic meters, and they are planning to expand up maybe several times more in near future. So if you have to use new additional water, let's say only 10% of the volume, and we are growing algae how many days? 4, 5, up to 10, 15 days.
Yeah.
So it's easy to calculate that the volumes are actually also expanding rapidly, and so it is not anymore a small issue. So this may be quite difficult in terms of the. To make it economically feasible way, but because you need plenty of space, and it's not only a question of space, but it is also a question of the growing conditions of the algae, for the algae to provide light enough and so on. So have you been thinking?
Yes.
This.
Yeah, this is one of the major problems regarding this idea. How to build a continuous flow-through system where wastewater could be used to first grow microalgae and then to go to Daphnia. But regarding RAS, I didn't find any even studies that tried to optimize this. But for sure, this amount of volume, it's impossible to use microalgae for everything, only partial. What is the maximum volume that microalgae can be cleaned? As you said, they need minimum 4 days, as we found in our studies, to remove contaminants. So, and I guess on mass scale, that is laboratory scale, but on mass scale, even more, maybe 8 days. So it's impossible to treat all the water. So, but partial treatment is also very beneficial. The less nutrients discharge, the better for the surrounding environment. So maybe in combination with constructed wetlands with plants, maybe it could be possible in future to treat all the water. Big question.
When the volumes are increasing, I would expect that also the risk for contamination may increase. And so I was also starting to think whether it is in a real world possible to use single species or strains in the cultures, microalgae cultures, or would it be better to rely on multi-species systems regarding the algae?
Yeah, that is an interesting question, as some studies show that a combination of different microalgae species in the consortium effect is removing more nutrients and providing higher biomass than a single monoculture. So, and it's also easier to maybe reduce contamination if we choose some strains that are maybe indigenous for surrounding environment or those wastewater. So I think it is better for removal of nutrients, and also for Daphnia, it's better to have more diverse diet. And also regarding the cultivation systems, for example, if we use these tubular photobioreactors, they are very big, and if contamination happens, then it has to be shut down and cleaned, and it's a big loss. So maybe because of that, if we decide to use monoculture, it's better to use these bubble columns, as it's smaller volume and easier to battle with contamination. But polyculture is for sure, I think, better option for this purpose.
Maybe different phase of the cultivation system. I mean the age and the, I would guess that even the nutrient concentrations don't remain at the same stable level all the time. According to my experience, everything is changing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also in the cultures, and so if we have several different species, maybe who knows? But maybe we can trap better even the nutrients when the concentrations are slightly lower at certain circumstances. And again, when they are increasing, maybe other species are adapted to higher concentrations. And so who knows, but it's probably something which would be worth to try.
Yeah. Some microalgae are better for, let's say, polishing that and grow in less nutrients, so that some are, let's say, growing better if there are more nutrients, also depending which one. But if we took into consideration also filter feeders, it's good to have polyculture, as, for example, some microalgae as Euglena and Cryptomonas have more lipids. It's more beneficial for the Daphne, and then also later for fish. But then those algae are not so good in removing nutrients. So if we add green microalgae that are good for removing, then we have a, let's say, perfect combination in theory. Still a lot of research need.
I have heard that Euglena gracilis, for example, is not growing well in the bottles.
In our case, no.
But it is extremely well growing if you have very slime plastic systems, because they are growing on the walls, not in the media. So different species have their own ways of growing as well. And on the other way around, I think there are some evidence that Chlamydomonas reinhardti you used in your cultures is not using nitrate as a nitrogen source. And actually we have to know very much the details of the physiological constraints of the different species we are aiming to cultivate. And not only the physiological characteristics, but also the behavior are needed to know.
Yes,
so
yes.
It's maybe we need quite a lot of this type of experiments you have carried out.
Yes.
In a very small scale, and then, as you nicely indicated, that we expand the size and length of the experiments to reach more close to the, let's say, the realistic scale, what is finally needed to make it properly working.
I can add the... some studies that I saw about the price of microalgae, one of the most important things is to select the best algae and also maybe even genetically modify them. And as you mentioned, Chlamydomonas, we observed that it's maybe more sensitive to phosphorus limitation. It's also... Previous studies found that when it's less phosphorus, it has stronger cell wall. It's easier to break, so Daphne cannot eat. Other algae, for example, Cenedesmus in wastewater, aggregates and change shape. So there are so different effects. Even our studies did not find all, and we raised even more questions. And there's so many microalgae species, so... It needs much more studies on finding the best ones.
And what is the final purpose if you are producing those highly valuable biomolecules, for example? You may need to choose a certain species, as you indicated, and if you are growing the Daphnia as a food for fish larvae, the species may be different. So there are actually quite many issues we have to keep in mind when we are making the selection of different things, like the species and strains and so on. That's true. So I think maybe that was the more common part of the discussion, and and let's move on. And you, in your very nice lecture, you already tackled some of the issues I was thinking to talk with you. And one was dealing with the terminology, but you explained already what means the. Recirculation aquaculture system, and how it differs from the Nordic RAS. Is there any difference? Is it just the some sort of standard that the Nordic means slightly colder water?
Yes.
That is the only difference. Or
maybe also
the specific character.
Yeah, maybe also other environmental parameters such as light, but definitely temperature is the main factor that we have to focus in Nordic countries.
Yeah, but why it's 17?
I think that is the around the most common temperature in boreal ras.
In boreal zone.
Yeah, okay. In indoor ras. Yeah.
In the middle of summer or in July, like in Finland. Maybe.
Not sure. I think it's for the indoors, indoor temperature.
Indoor temperature.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I could not find much data on that. But that's.
So is it just the most suitable temperature for producing fish? Someone in the audience probably knows.
Yeah,
yes.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the point. Probably yes. You also explained microalgae bioremediation. What does it mean? And then you are talking about microalgae Daphnia bioremediation, which is it equal with the integrated multi-trophic aquaculture when Daphnia is included?
Yeah, for integrated. Together.
It's more common expression, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Integrated, like two or more different organisms from different trophic levels.
Yeah.
So if you have fish, algae, fish and algae is also integrated, but with Daphnia, three organisms.
Okay, I think we are quite well aware about the terms you have used in your thesis. As you said, and we just very briefly were talking about the scale of your experiments. They were, the scale was very small.
Yes.
Which, of course, makes sense when you are starting to figure out what are the proper species or strains of algae, what kind of conditions, growing conditions, would be suitable for getting the final expected results and so on. If you should start again your experiments, is there anything in your experimental design you would like to change? Now when you are more wise, you are more experienced.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, if I didn't know which species are the best, I would have to start from the small, as it's very hard to start with big volumes if I have 10 species. But now, when I know which one are, if I start only with these four, I would start with larger volumes and longer periods. I would investigate more parameters, not on, we didn't analyze all parameters every day, but I think if I would have chance and opportunity, I would investigate every day, and I would test the continuous flow. We examine only batch cultures, but it's more important continuous flow. Yeah, many things I would improve.
So you used batch cultures.
Yes. Yeah.
How many divisions actually the algae were able to have during this fairly short term incubations? Approximately. How many divisions, cell divisions, the algae on average had during these incubations?
You mean like doubling time?
Yes, yes. Doublings per day, per the incubation period.
I didn't calculate that parameter, but the growth rate were quite high.
They were quite high.
Yeah, for the...
And quite similar, actually,
yes.
Between the four different species.
And also between different experiments. And yeah, so maybe for Chlamydomonas, around 0.8 per day
yes.
growth rate. And that was the highest. But generally, algae had between 0.5 and 0.8 specific growth rate per day. I'm not sure on doubling time how much is that. But,
so I was just thinking when it's known that some algae may have several divisions just relying on the in-cell nutrient storages. So it came to just to my mind whether it would be possible when you have very short period experiments that the algae are actually part of the time, at least just relying on the nutrient storages of the cells by themselves, not really taking up. If the experimental length would be longer, you could have even higher uptake rates.
Yes, yeah, that's true. For green algae, for example, in the first experiment, they removed around 80% of nutrients, but we also measured, but we didn't report those data. On after 9 days, they removed more than 99% of nitrate, so longer period. It's, and also in these 4 days, some algae didn't. I think some didn't even go into the stationary phase, so they were still in the exponential growth phase. So, yeah.
So is the true flow system, the numbers could be even higher.
Yeah.
Or not.
It depends on many factors, but it could be, and if you optimize all conditions, but also we had a limited. They were mostly limited by phosphorus. Our MP ratio of wastewater was very high, so that's why we think maybe that's why they stopped absorbing nitrogen because of the limitation of phosphorus. But we tried then experiments by adding phosphorus to see if they will remove more nitrates, but we didn't find any difference. So we're not sure. It has to be researched more, the effect. As I found some study that for Haematicoccus pluvialis, nitrogen is more limiting than phosphorus. But for other algae, it's different. So I'm not sure, it's vague still.
The initial nutrient concentrations, both nitrogen and phosphorus, so varied a bit between the different experiments.
Yes. Yes.
And I compared to those concentrations relative to the municipal raw wastewater. And actually, you said that they are 10 to 100 times less, but I noticed that the nitrogen nitrate concentrations were more or less at the same level. The raw municipal wastewater contains, while phosphorus concentrations were clearly lower. Most of your experiments. So if I have correctly interpreted the results, I guess this waste water actually is quite rich, especially in terms of nitrogen, and not maybe so much in terms of phosphorus.
Yeah. We took wastewater also from Luque for the second paper, and it was higher than we had first at the department, 100 or more of nitrate. And also I know some rust that have even 1,000 of milligrams per liter of nitrate. So it's hard to find the data on the waste composition of commercial RAS. So I'm not sure what is the... I'm trying to find some average, and maybe I think 100 to 130 of nitrate is more or less average on some RAS that I examined. Between 1 and 6 most. But, usually phosphorus is limited.
Ratio clearly indicate that the limiting factor, but also the different species, of course, they respond differently to the concentrations, and some are more are better in taking up,
yes,
even low concentrations, and perhaps also by using organic phosphorus. Also, the initial cell densities between the different experiments varied a bit. I well understand that it's not always easy to just add the same numbers. But do you think that may somehow influence on your results?
Definitely, it had some influence. It's very hard to, as you assume, to have the. We tried very carefully to calculate the initial concentration, but always different, not only between experiments, but between replicates. Even though we divide the same amount, it's very hard to work with them, to work precisely with them. But on the other hand, it's for the big, for the larger scale, maybe it's not so important to have so precise starting concentration. So, but yeah, definitely it had some effect. But I think it didn't have much effect in the experiments per cell, but maybe between papers. That's why we had different results, maybe. But yeah,
just in details, maybe.
Hard to know. But,
yes, it's true that it's not always so easy to interpret the differences and the meaning, yes. And what are the primary reasons for the differences. So, if we consider the experimental setup, I think, as much as I understand, you have done very nice work, and it's easy to see that it's a good starting point to start with small cultures and type of experiments, and I think you have carried out those properly, and also, so I think they have been justified, and also, as much I understand, you have made the statistical tests proper way and received the results which you have evaluated by using the normal scientific ways. So there is no doubt about that. So I think work regarding the setup, experimental design. Now I'm going to move to maybe a bit more specific questions. I got this. This paper copy so late that
yeah, understand.
And I noticed that in Jyväskylä University you are not producing a specific paper copy for the opponent with extra white pages to make the
yeah.
The notes, which is sad.
Yeah. Okay.
At Helsinki we have, definitely. Therefore, we may have more questions.
Oh,
that is a joke. But anyway, I would like to go briefly back to this example, this Varkaus example. I mentioned before that according to some information I gathered, they have the present tanks contain almost 11,000 cubic meters, and they are planning to expand the production in near future. So according to the statistics, the volume they have to renovate per day is 2,500 cubic meters. So it's 23% of the total volume, approximately. So more than 150, according to the information they have been providing. And so in future, this wastewater volume, which is now something like 2,500 cubic meters per day, will increase up to 7,000. It's a huge amount of water. And so I'm just briefly going back to the discussion we already did before, that if we have to cultivate the algae, let's say, 10 days. If I understand correctly, the volume requirements for the tanks or whatever they are where the algae are growing is something like 20,000 cubic meters, 25,000 cubic meters. So it's a quite a lot of water. So it's very difficult for me to understand how this can be done in a real world. So I think it may be unrealistic. Maybe I'm just not too optimistic, a bit pessimistic regarding this point of view, but it is quite a lot of water and not easy to treat. That is almost for sure. So the challenges are huge.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, it's much more easy to understand that in countries where outdoor systems can be applied. That probably would be quite easy to do. But when we are indoor, the investments and it's not only a question of investments but also the running costs may be huge. Yes. Maybe you have some information.
Yes, that is the biggest challenge. But I heard that there are some zero discharge RAS system in Netherlands. They did quite a good job. They're doing quite a good job on cultivating microalgae and also applying them in aquaculture. But still, this climate in Netherlands even is not so appropriate. These are production prices between different countries. So you can see the big effect of location. So, but what is interesting here to see that even this ROW, this means open system raceway, even the open systems are not the best choice. The price, for example, in Netherlands is much higher than these three are closed systems. Photobioreactor. So, you even in colder and warmer climate, it's cheaper to use closed system for microalgae. But then I think the maximum volume that is possible to use is maybe I think 100 500 liters per bioreactor. So.
Surf shading quite quickly comes a problem.
Yeah.
If you have big tanks.
Yes.
Of course, you may overcome this by using more solar panels or light sources there, but
yes.
It's also a question of money because of the investments and so on. But
the light is a big part of price reduction.
Yeah.
Yeah, the main part.
Yes. Yes, still the. The light sources are quite expensive. Probably the prices will go down gradually, but yes, it's not so cheap yet, at least.
LED grow lights are improving by the day, and their efficiency is growing, so it's good future estimated for them.
And of course, as we were briefly also discussing before, the contamination issue is probably increasing when the volumes are expanding.
Yeah.
And so what is actually, I know that it's very difficult to keep cultures actinic for a long time. Even in the best laboratories, where they are extremely experienced in running the cultures, suddenly some fridges, all the cultures can be contaminated.
Yes.
No one knows where is the source.
Yeah, true.
It's happened. Almost like the COVID-19 virus, where it comes from. Do we need actually actionic cultures?
I think it's not so needed if we use in aquaculture, but if we are using algae for other purposes, producing pigments and so, then but for aquaculture it's not needed to have monoculture. It's better to use, I think, polycultures, but it's even possible to have more bubble columns, photobioreactors, and each one have different microalgae, and then combine them later. And if contamination happens between them, it's easy to fix the problem. But the contaminations are very common even in our experiments with small volumes. We don't know from where they come from, but it's happening, like they're coming from air. It's very strange, so it's very challenging.
That is true. Yes, viruses also may cause problems. Sometimes the actinic cultures just collapse. No one may probably know where the viruses are coming, but so it is regarding these issues. Maybe as simple systems as possible would, in long term, be the best. I guess. Or what do you think?
If you by simple mean like open system, they are the most simple. Well, many studies show that closed systems are much better than open. So, and also artificial light is better than sunlight. So maybe on long term it's not worthwhile to have these simple ones, but it's better to have more capital investments.
Systems.
Yeah, and then the operational investments are lower then.
I don't know how it might be in this recirculating aquaculture systems, but I have understood that, for example, if we look at the wastewater treatment plants, treating the municipal or industrial wastewaters, the most difficult, problematic periods are those when the system doesn't work for some reason.
Yeah.
And I have learned during the recent years that if we go to the wastewater treatment plant and we are asking from the people who are responsible for carrying running the systems. At each place, there typically is only one person who believes that I more or less understand what's going on there. And even if we are talking a bit more with the person, he or she may say, I'm not really quite sure what's going on.
Yeah.
And if the system collapses, in the worst case, it may take months, several months to recover. And that is, even in not only in short term, but even in long term, quite problematic regarding the efficiency of the plant. Because in the worst case, practically everything goes through without any proper treatment. I don't know if that may happen in this type of systems. This is also something we have to maybe keep in mind, that we must have a very reliable system which is able to maintain the uptake of nutrients and transformation the nutrients from the wastewater to the biomass in long term. So this is also important.
That's why it's better to have more complex system and more segmentation of the system. If you have just one open system and you have contamination of some zooplankton, it will destroy all microalgae populations. So it's a big loss, but you have separated photobioreactors and contamination is much, much less.
Yeah.
On long term, it's better to have artificial closed.
I looked at the information you are providing in the summary in those two tables, and I combined the growth maximum growth rates and the nutrient uptake rates, and I just simply used those few numbers, and I didn't recognize any kind of relationship between those. Originally, I was thinking that maybe there should be some sort of positive relationship between the nutrient uptake and the growth rate, but I couldn't find.
Yeah, it's
what might be the reason?
It's strange with different microalgae. It's a different so. Interesting result.
But I mean that just looking at one single species in different experiments.
Uh-huh.
But there wasn't any kind of... they were just randomly distributed the points there.
Yeah, I didn't find any strong correlation between growth and removal. Usually the more they grow, the more they remove. But not necessary. For example, if you looked at microalgae Haemaptococcus pluvialis, that case is very interesting and challenging. For example, when we use different lights on one spectrum, it didn't grow much, but it removed more nutrients, possibly due as because it has different size of cells. So by becoming bigger cell, it maybe absorb more nutrients, but in number it doesn't grow much. So there is not a strict correlation, I think. So that's why I think it's good to analyze both these aspects, growth and removal of nutrients, when studying this algae.
It has been said that under steady state conditions, actually, there should be some sort of relationship between the growth rate and substrate concentration, which can be understood like also the uptake, because the uptake is somehow also relative to the concentration. but I think you are right by saying that of course the different species respond differently, and also the growth mode can be different in different species. Some species are dividing as soon as they are uptaking nutrients and photosynthesizing. Some others are not dividing. The cell size is growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And later on they may divide. So yeah. They have very different type of growing modes as well. So.
That's why it's good to have polyculture in these purposes. They have different times when they start taking nutrients and growing, so having more species
you
could avoid losing time on not removing nutrients.
Those biochemical compositions of different species and strains is very important and interesting issue. Told before also those highly valuable compounds may provide opportunities also to make profitable these systems in future, especially and this is. Also something which need to keep in mind very much. Of course, it also has connection to the value of the food we are probably providing further to fish larvae or adult fish. So the this.
For example, this microalga Haematococcus, it has good nutritional quality, it has important fatty acids, and also it has astaxanthin, so it can be used for multi-purpose. And the debris of those extraction could be used, for example, as biofuel or feed, so it's the purpose is very wide.
So you have been talking a couple of times about the light quantity and quality and your conclusion has been that the artificial light provides a very good opportunity to grow.
Yes.
This is quite clear.
Yes.
Statement the optimization of the quality and quantity is also an important issue. And when we are increasing the volume, as we were talking before, it's not necessarily always so simple because of the self-shading and the volume, when it's increasing, it's more difficult to provide the same amount of light as photons, and also the quality may change. But this is also something which has to be optimized if we want to get the most feasible way of doing things.
Yes. There are many also challenges regarding, even though it's better to use artificial light, but still a lot of studies have to be done regarding intensity, photoperiod. Each microalga had specific. Not always that the higher intensity is better, but in some algae, it's higher intensity. It reduces their efficiency, but it's still much better than sunlight. It can be controlled in different ways. We can also put lights inside the culture in the water, so we maximize the utilization of lights and light energy.
Periodicity is something which also may have a great importance.
Yes.
Especially in case of some species.
Yes, definitely.
More than with some others.
Yes, yeah. As we found for Haemophilus fluvialis, it's very sensitive for on light, and we still don't know the main reason. But on higher periodicity, higher photoperiod, it goes to the astaxanthin red phase, accumulation phase faster, and we don't know if that phase removes more nutrients. So there is no clear answer what is the best condition of light for that macroalgae. There are many factors.
And maybe also regarding this high valuable biomolecules, the light intensity and quality and periodicity may also have some influence.
Yes, yes.
As well as the nutrient concentrations. In the integrated multitrophic aquaculture systems, what do you think? Which is more difficult? Is it to grow the microalgae or to keep the Daphnia happily living and eating the microalgae?
Yeah,
it wasn't so clear for me what is your idea regarding the how the Daphnia can be. I guess they have to somehow collect it or concentrate it when they are used as a food for fish larvae, for example. How this can be done?
Yes, that is. I think even more challenging to optimize Daphnia conditions in this IMTA system, as they are very sensitive to different parameters, and we try to I try to make the continuous flow, but it needs much more research as there on the pH, nutrients, all water characteristics, also. Retention time of wastewater, different parameters regarding Daphnia that still need a lot of research. But regarding the harvesting, I think it's not a big problem as they can be harvested mechanically without big prices. I think it's cost efficient to use mechanical harvesting and trap them as live feed and then sell them. They have the highest value as live feed. Harvesting microalgae is very challenging.
What about the chemicals? You mentioned somewhere in your thesis that in the aquaculture systems people have to use all kind of chemicals. Like detergents for cleaning, tanks, pipelines, antimicrobial chemicals, vitamins, antibiotics, and so on. So do you see those may cause any troubles regarding the microalgae cultivations?
Yes, that is the second challenge when harvesting microalgae. Those these compounds are called emerging contaminants, combining all this that you mentioned, and it can be a problem for microalgae. But luckily, regarding RAS wastewater, there are not so much contaminants that can negatively affect. Well, depending on the system, I don't know, but. It doesn't propose much problem as when using, I think, municipal wastewater is the biggest problem. But regarding aquaculture wastewater, I think it's not a big problem. But then also Daphnia, after microalgae remove some amount of those emerging contaminants, Daphnia can also polish them, as many studies done just with Daphnia cleaning wastewater without microalgae. So Daphnia are also good in removing those things. So after both microalgae and Daphnia, I think the water will be reduced significantly of those emerging contaminants. So if the water goes back to lakes or even to culture tank, I think it's much cleaner and safer.
Okay. We have spent some time already, and we are not in a hurry. I don't know how many hours we can continue, but I think we can go briefly through maybe the summary, and I don't have too many more questions anymore dealing with the summary, but I have maybe a few ones, and also this manuscript. The published papers, they have published successfully, and that's fine.
Yes.
I think it's not any more needed to go through those. So most of the questions, specific questions, I noticed, I made some remarks here. We have already been discussing. So I may have only a rather few ones. The summary, I was wondering, sorry, let's have a look. Sorry, I was starting from the wrong place to look at, but I noticed that this is a small issue, but somewhere, yes, the table 3 there in the summary, the removal rate. You give the if I understand correctly, the correct unit somewhere else, but here in the table you give milligrams per day. It's a bit difficult to understand the unit.
Yeah.
Should it be a milligram per volume of water per day? I think you give that unit somewhere in the text.
Yeah.
Is this correct one?
Yeah. Removal is nutrient removal. How much quantity of nutrients removed
per day?
Per day. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But if it's not related to the volume of water. Okay. This may indicate the removal rate relative to the biomass. Somehow, or just relative to the wastewater.
yeah.
It sounds a bit strange for me, but maybe I am stupid enough not to understand.
Yeah.
I think you are somewhere else giving the same numbers relative to the volume of water.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to check.
Yeah, I think you're correct that it should be milligrams per liter per day. That I missed
it.
The
makes more sense.
Yeah. In the summary, in paper cities, that
this is a small issue.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Because I. To have a look at this screen display here, but I will have a look at the manuscript paper. We have really talking about practically all of the issues I was thinking it's worth to discuss today. In the manuscript, there is this sentence talking about the water renewal rates required by the modern recirculation, circulating aquaculture systems are low, less than 10% of total volume per day. I think it may be worth to recalculate, if I did correctly, the numbers of this Varkaus case. Because if I calculated correctly, they were at least twice more than you give here. This is still a manuscript. You can at least think if the numbers are correct or not. On the page 5, you are talking about the biological contamination of microalgae cultures. And you mentioned, for example, bacteria, protozoa, fungi, non-targeted microalgae. You are not talking about viruses.
No, just...
Is that...
We didn't include analyzing.
Because I don't know if we should call organisms or not organisms, but they are causing problems anyway, it's for sure. Or may cause problems. And also, please check the concentration of nitrogen and phosphorus in municipal wastewater, because I think that your concentrations are actually almost at the same level relative to the nitrogen concentrations in raw wastewater, municipal wastewater flowing in, to the treatment plants. Whereas phosphorus concentrations are lower. Not necessarily so much, because 6 to 9 up to 10 milligrams per liter are quite common phosphorus concentrations in raw municipal wastewater. And in the highest you have, were up to 3, if I remember correctly. So they are not so much lower. So this 100 times lower, maybe not true, if my numbers are correct.
I think for phosphate, maybe it's similar, but I think nitrate, maybe it's higher. I'm not sure. Actually, your paper, I found where you use the constructed wetlands in Lami, that the concentration of nitrate after water treatment plant, maybe between 20 and maximum 57.
That's true, yes. So I guess but it's after.
Yeah, but
it's not a row.
But I guess before it's even higher than that.
But it's not higher than up to 50.
Okay.
Yes, it's not higher. So that treatment plant is not very efficient in removing nitrogen, which is typical for the small-scale treatment plants in Finland. The biggest ones, like the Viikki in Helsinki, they are capable to remove over 90. And the most modern ones, I don't know how it's in Jyväskylä, but very typically is somewhere between 60 and 70. The nitrate directive of the European Union says that up to 70 should be removed before discharges to the rivers or lakes. So the treatment plants are nowadays making quite big investments in many places. I have made one more question to the manuscript. Page 14, when you just start results and discussion chapter, you mention here that filtration decreased the turbidity. And I have a note here. What actually was removed?
I guess some suspended solids.
When the turbidity decreased, so are the fecal pellets of fish or what are those feet remains or
I think the suspended soil is mostly maybe part of some microorganisms, but we didn't use a bacterial filter. We use 0.45 micrometers, so most of the bacteria could pass through. So,
but some particles anyway.
Yeah, suspended soil particles. Yeah,
that probably also containing plenty of bacteria.
Yes,
on
them. Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's true.
We're talking already about the self-shading differences between the species in question. Okay, here. Paragraph 3.4, bacterial biomass in microalgae cultures of unfiltered and filtered wastewater. You start the first sentence by saying unfiltered wastewater showed an overall higher bacterial biomass based on actinobacterial fatty acids. So you didn't determine the bacterial biomass, but I was wondering, of course you can think that the fatty acids concentration was a proxy about the bacterial biomass. This is the meaning I well understand, but in the following sentence, you are excluding selenostrum, both Haematococcus Monorhaphidium cultures had higher bacterial biomasses. Should it be better to just say actinobacterial fatty acid concentrations? Because if you are using the bacterial biomass, you are telling to the reader that the reader may think that you have determined the bacterial biomass, which is not true.
Yes,
in this case.
Yes, you're correct,
Yes, it's a small issue, but it clarified the thing.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for it. We'll change that, yeah.
So I have here on page 29 in this manuscript also some sort of note in the summary paragraph that usually bacterial uptake is superior in comparison to algae, and thus when phosphorus is a limiting nutrient relative to nitrogen, the growth of bacteria may strongly influence algal photosynthesis and the growth of the microalgae.
I'm not sure what is the main mechanism. Some studies show that bacteria can maybe improve microalgae growth, some that it can reduce, but it definitely affects somehow.
Mm. And if they compete about the limiting nutrient, in this case phosphorus, I think there at least is quite high probability that bacteria are superior relative to the algae, yes. I would guess. I'm not sure if you need to mention it, but this was something I was noticed. So I think we have more or less went through all the issues I recognized and I wanted to discuss with you, and somewhere I have the final. Wait a moment.
Yes.
Okay, I have a few things. Maybe I give you an opportunity to say something more. Some, let's say, final questions. I already asked what you would like to make maybe other way round if you would start from the beginning, and that was relative to the experimental setup. So if I am now asking what might be the key lessons from the present study for those who would like to make something similar. I'm sure you have learned a lot of issues by doing the experiments, and later on by writing the papers and analyzing your results. So if you would just very briefly synthesize the key lesson for someone who will start to do something similar.
In question, well, maybe first of all to be very careful when designing experiments and conducting and analyzing the results, as and also to incorporate as many parameters as possible, especially when doing research with Daphnia, that we showed that different methods of analyzing gave different results. So to have as more as possible ways of analyzing the experiments is maybe one of the most important things to conduct these experiments. And, to always have to keep in mind the big picture of how to use them. So, and if somebody would continue my work, I would advise to start searching the answers on making this system continuous to find a way to make continuous flow of wastewater through photobioreactors of microalgae and then through Daphnia to make the combined system. And those would be the main points I would give.
Thank you. So, Finally, do you have anything else in your mind you would like to tell the audience and both of us here sitting beside you?
I think the microalgae are the amazing organisms, and I build a strong passion to them, and I encourage every research possible and implementation of these organisms in the, our lives. Keep researching them and using them. And be my final words to keep the research on microalgae. They can maybe save the world.
We are thankful for them because of our life as well. Great. Okay. Maybe it's time for the final statement. So today we have examined the doctoral thesis entitled The Use of Biological Traps for Water Treatment in Recirculating Aquaculture Systems, prepared by Sedomir Stevcik. The thesis consists of two publications in peer-reviewed international journals, one manuscript and a summary with an introduction to the subject, description of material and methods, and a rather comprehensive results and discussion section. The contributions and discussion today clearly indicated that the candidate is aware of the relevant literature and he knows well the subject. Besides the doctoral candidate, there are four other responsible authors mentioned in the papers, including the manuscript, and two of them are his supervisors. The contribution of each of them has been clarified, and without doubt, the doctoral candidate has had an important role at all phases, from conceptualization to writing the papers. So, I'm convinced that the doctoral thesis meets the requirements set for doctoral thesis in the discipline. And therefore, I'm very pleased to recommend the thesis to be accepted as a doctoral thesis by the Faculty of Mathematics and Science of the University of Jyväskylä, February 12, 2021, at Jyväskylä.
Thank you, Professor Lauri Arvola, for your valuable comments to my thesis. And anyone has any critical comments to make on my dissertation, please ask Kustos for the floor.
Audience following the dissertation online can present their questions via phone. The number is provided at the university webpage next to the link to this session. By now, if somebody would have liked to phone, they might have already done so. So additional questions were not presented. So the public examination is concluded.
May I ask the audience to join the sparkling wine?